Good evening. Welcome to The Blues. I'm Lee Hay, and tonight you're in for a treat. You'll hear a phone interview I did earlier this week with Derek Trucks, who talks about his band's new CD and their Wheels of Soul tour, which is coming next week to the PNC Pavilion and Rose Music Center. You'll also hear two songs from their album, Signs. Then in the second half of the show, Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt dropped by our studio with their guitars on Father's Day while they were in town for a conversation with Ron Esposito. Derek Trucks, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and Noah Hunt on The Blues. The Tedeschi Trucks Band is bringing their Wheels of Soul tour to PNC Pavilion on Friday, July 19th, and the next night, Saturday, July 20th, to the Rose Music Center in Huber Heights. With me on the phone is guitarist Derek Trucks. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Blackberry Smoke and a group called Shovels and Rope are touring with you this year. How's the energy on this tour different from last year's with the Drive-By Truckers and the Marcus King Band?
You know, it's a little bit similar. I mean, the bands last year and this year, we didn't all really know each other all that well. I knew Marcus a little, but everyone connected immediately. You know, we started in Jacksonville in my hometown, and we had the bands come in a day early, and we had a cookout and a hang. So it's nice everyone gets to connect first. You know, it's not a ton of groups that tour as much and as hard as we do, and all the other bands on these Wheels of Soul tours seem to be in that small group. So there's already a camaraderie of just road dogs and lifers. So you kind of understand and respect each other right out of the gate because of that. But this, you know, this one's been unique. Shovels and Rope is a husband and wife duo, and they have their young kids on the road. So there's that connection, and there's a lot to talk about there, especially for Carrie Ann and Sue, because you know, that's a unique and difficult thing to pull off, is touring the way we do and raising children, and so that's a nice connection. And the Black Mary Smoke guys are just great, and they're. A lot of them are from Atlanta, so there's a lot of deep roots there. And Charlie Starr has been sitting in with us every night and just elevating the show when he gets up there. So it's off to a solid start.
Do you have your kids with you on tour this summer?
We do. You know, the summer tour is the one time we can just take them out and not have to worry about school and everything else. So they always come out on the summer tour, but they're. You know, they're 17 and 14 now, so we only have a few years left when we can just take them with us. Now they have agendas and things to do on their own.
I would think. Have they got college in the future plans?
Oh yeah, I mean we've on our last break before our European tour, we went and visited colleges with Charlie, our oldest, and Sophia. She was there, and you know, trying to get a head start on that. But yeah, it comes at you fast.
Well, since you were here last year, the band has released a new CD entitled Signs. It's on the Fantasy label. In-house effort, I noticed, recorded in your studio in Jacksonville, and you and a couple of fellows produced, engineered, and mixed it. You and your wife, Susan Tedeschi, wrote or co-wrote most of the songs. You must be really happy with how it turned out.
You know, I am. I mean, it was a tougher record to write and make just because maybe the subject matter was so close to home, and you know, there's a lot of raw emotions in some of the songs. So that kind of takes it out of you in a different way. But the making of the record and all the other work that went into it, it was so nice being able to do it in our studio and, you know, with the family around, and Jim Scott and Bobby Tees, who we've been working together for years now. I feel like we really have found a sound, and you try to push it forward every time. And felt really good about the way this one turned out. So yeah, it is a little extra satisfying when you do it from very beginning to the very end of the process, and you know, you get to be involved in all of it.
But it must have been hard to lose Kofi earlier this year, who's on keyboards on the album.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, Kofi was just such a huge part of our lives and family and band. I mean, we were together for, I think, over 20 years, me and Kofi. So it's, I mean, that's one that I don't think we'll ever fully recover from losing him. And the way we did, I mean, we really thought he was on the mend and on his way back. And, he passed on the day the record was released. We were playing in his hometown. We kind of planned it to release a record in his hometown. We were so happy that he was back. You know, he recorded on the record, wrote a lot of the songs. So, yeah, I mean, everyone's reeling from that. But we feel him every night. I mean, he was such a huge part of every song we wrote as a band. So you hear him every night. There's melodies and parts and things that he conceived that are just they're just with you. Some songs are hard to play because of it, because you really do, you hear them and you feel them, and then you look over and these not there. So you know, there's a few moments every night where you look across the stage and you can tell somebody's having a moment, and you know pretty quickly what it's about. So, you know, we're in the process of processing that, but it's nice to be together as a band and be surrounded by people that knew him and loved him, and I think that makes it easier to you know, get through it.
Well, I noticed on the album there's a feeling of loss, and in the lyrics and the importance of friends and family. It's been a couple of tough years for the band, hadn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it has, and you know, you realize everybody deals with loss at some point. You know, it's something that when it's happening to you, it feels like no one understands it, but then you realize everyone understands it. So, you know, a lot of the record is about that, and it's about how you move forward, and you know, and then you know, the Kofi passing on the day of the release put a lot of those themes to the test for us. You know, because I mean, we were when I lost my uncle and Greg and the Colonel, these are people that were pillars in our life, always there. You know, but they were Kofi was in the band, and Kofi was much more sudden and unexpected, so it was even another layer deep of trying to process that. But you know, like I said, being together and getting to play music has certainly been therapeutic.
Susan's song "When Will I Begin" brought up tears and lots of emotion when I listened to it. What was it like, the writing process on that one?
You know, she had written two different songs on acoustic guitar, and she had played it for me and a few of the guys in the band, and we worked up versions of them, and they were both just instantly you knew this is really good. It just made you feel a certain way, and but it felt like maybe it could be one song instead of two, so we arranged it the way that we did, and we only played it once or twice in the studio, and you could just tell it was, some songs just kind of play themselves, and you know, there's something about a song that the person that's singing it wrote all of it, you know. So when she's singing it, she means it, because it's not somebody else's words, it's her words, and it's not somebody else's music, it's her music. So that one, I'm with you. That was one of the songs that when we were mixing the record and every time we heard it, that might be the highlight for me. And but yeah, that's all her. And that's another one that it feels really timely, you know, with all the stuff that's come out in the last few years, all the Me Too movement and all of that. I feel like that's a song that, I feel like that's maybe Susan's, not response to that, but just, you know, things grow out of people telling their stories.
And Strengthen What Remains, that's just typical of this strong statement of love that I felt in so many of these songs.
Yeah, that was a song that Mike Madison wrote. He was going to visit his aunt who was passing away. He think he knew it was the last time he was going to see her, and he wrote that song on the way to see her. And when he played it for us, it was just a devastatingly beautiful song. And then the way Susan sang it just wiped me out. And for me, the one of the other highlights on the record is the quartet section that Kofi wrote and conducted. Just beautiful. A beautiful instrumental moment there in the middle of the tune, and then he takes a really short but perfect flute solo. That's one of those timeless moments for me. I'm just really happy that happened. It was amazing being in the room when he was conducting those strings and just seeing how happy he was and hearing this sound in your head being brought to life. So that was one of those moments. While it was happening, you realize you were lucky to be there and lucky that it happened. So, you know, those are things that with Kofi that you hold on to. You realize, you know, we were really lucky to be around him as long as we were, and he did a lot of good work. He left a lot of good reminders of how special he was.
And Still Your Mind must have been special with him too.
Yeah, and that, you know, he was a master at just sitting down at the piano, or, you know, we'd be rehearsing or recording, but it was always the time when everyone was getting up to leave, and he would just play something off the top of his head and it would often just be this amazing concept, this amazing movement, but he would always forget it. He would never remember what he did because he was just that kind of player. It was just always happening, and so I got to be better at having some kind of recording device around and capturing it, or while it was happening, and like, Kofi, what is that? Remember that. So that song was one of those sketches that Kofi just came up with, just kind of throw away. And the intro and the outro of the song was another time where we were getting up to leave the studio and he was just playing this beautiful passage on the piano. And I was like, roll tape. we must remember this. And we ended up, the intro that we used was the one that we just kind of caught on the fly. It was just so, so beautiful. And, but yeah, then we finished writing it with me and Doyle. But 95% of the music in that is Kofi.
And I thought that the opening of Shame had a touch of the Allman Brothers to it.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's one when we started writing it and playing it, I immediately thought this would be right at home on one of their records. So definitely a tip of the hat, whether we knew it or not when we were first playing it. But yeah, I mean, that has that feel and that propulsion. You know, I could certainly imagine Uncle Butch playing drums on that one.
And the ending, which is the last song on the album, that was pretty special too.
Yeah, and you know, that was a song that me and Susan and Oliver Wood wrote, sitting in a room talking about the Colonel and just writing. We wrote so many verses about him and just around that song, and just kind of condensed it down to what's there. And we recorded that demo, and it was hard to listen to. It cut to the bone so much. And you know, the Colonel married Oliver and his wife, and I've known the Colonel since I was 12 years old, and Sue knew the Colonel before me, and Sue knew each other, so we all had a really way back and deep connection to him. And so writing a song about him and about, you know, that night in essence was, you know, cut pretty close to the bone. And that was one where I felt like it needed to be on the record, but I felt like it wasn't something that I ever really wanted to play, maybe too close to home. So it's, I think that's the only time we ever performed it, was the time that we captured it. And, but yeah, another one where Sue just, she gets right to the heart of the matter when she's singing it. It's, you definitely feel it.
Well, getting back to the tour, your set list will probably change every night, but will you be performing some of the songs from the new album?
Yeah, we've been getting a few in every night and really playing almost everything on the record other than the ending. I think we played everything. And a lot of them are just getting stronger by the gig. So that I think everybody in the band looks forward to playing the new stuff. It's just something to dig your teeth into and something that we haven't fully explored yet. And I mean, in some of the tunes, it's strange because some of the tunes that we wrote with Kofi and that we never got to play live with him. So, you know, some of these songs are really the first times we're getting to air them out. Which is, in some ways, it's great because it's, you know, it has to be a new beginning for the band. You're never going to replace somebody like Kofi. It's just an impossible task. So you have to reimagine things, and it has to be a new chapter. You honor him at all times, but it has to change, and it has to be something else. So getting to play these tunes and reimagine them has been nice too. And it's nice seeing that looking out and you play a song that you played once or twice and you realize people know it and they know the lyrics to the tunes. And that's a good feeling. That's kind of new to me.
And the band's going to be at Clapton's Guitar Festival in Dallas, September 20 and 21st. That must be a really fun reunion.
You know, it is. We've done a few of them now, and it's always a trip. I mean, the first one we did, you know, there's B.B. King's there and Johnny Winter and Hubert Sumlin and a lot of your heroes, and you know, a lot of them have passed on, so it's a different reunion now, but it's still great to get everybody together. And it's always a good day when you get that invite in the mail. And I think it'll be really good for the band.
And one last question. Your band's playing at the Beacon Theater in New York City, September 27th through October 5th. Four dates are already sold out. What's behind this long engagement?
You know, that's a tradition that started I mean, for me, it started with the Allman Brothers. They, I think, maybe from 1990 or 91 on, they did a residency at the Beacon. And when I joined the Almonds, they were up to 12 to 15 shows in, you know, in a month. And there was just something about the energy in that room and the crowds that would come out. And you see a lot of familiar faces from night to night, but there, you know, there'd be a lot of people that only make one or two shows. But there's just something about that city and that theater. So when we were starting to think about where we wanted to play in New York, we did a gig at the Beacon and it felt great. And then we did two nights at the Beacon and then like, you know what, let's try to continue the tradition, you know, in our own way. I wanted to move it away from March because I didn't want it to be too close to the, every March, the Allman Brothers are in New York. I feel like that was their thing. And you can't recreate things like that. So we put it in a different time of year. So it's a different feel up there, but, the Beacon's just a special place. And it's great to walk into the rooms where, you know, it's the same union guys that have been working there since I joined the Almonds in 99. There's a lot of familiar faces. And, I mean, when our son, Charlie, was 10 days old, he was in the sixth floor dressing room at the Beacon Theater. So it's, he's been there every year. He's 17 now. Every year he's been up at the Beacon for at least a handful of shows. So it's a full on tradition for us.
A lot of memories.
Yeah, there is. There's, you know, and doing this summer tour and playing a lot of these venues, there's a lot of memories. I mean, you go to these backstage areas and having been there with the Almonds and a lot of other bands, you remember whose dressing room was where, and you remember different rehearsals you had in different places. So there's a lot of ghosts in these places for us, but they're good. They're good memories, you know. At least 90%+ of the memories are good. I'll take that.
Well, thanks for talking with us, and we look forward to your Wheels of Soul tour when it comes to the area.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time, and we will see you soon.
All righty. Be safe on your journey.
All right, you too.
The 12-piece Tedeschi Trucks Band will bring this year's edition of their Wheels of Soul tour to PNC Pavilion on Friday, July 19th at 7 o'clock, and Saturday, July 20th at 7 o'clock to Rose Music Center in Huber Heights. Opening acts are Blackberry Smoke and Shovels and Rope.
A world where dreams come true wasn't meant for you. All the lessons learned, pages that you turn. Living's just a school for breaking hearts in two. With all the tears you saved, strength in what remains. And oh, what a beautiful season. Oh, what a beautiful life. Do you put up a fight? Kill for what was right, but circumstances change, strength in what remains. Baby, I'm a fool, waiting here for you on the closing of the day, strength in what remains. Oh, oh, what a beautiful life. Oh, what a beautiful season. Oh, I can give you a reason. Oh, it's a beautiful life.
That was Strengthen What Remains from the Tedeschi Trucks Band's new CD, Signs, and starting the show, another song from that album, When Will I Begin? They're coming to PNC Pavilion Friday, July 19th, and then heading up to Rose Music Center for a show Saturday, July 20th. Blackberry Smoke and Shovels and Rope are the opening acts.
Good evening. I'm Ron Esposito. We're going to be in conversation with Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt. The Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band just recently here in Cincinnati on the bill with Buddy Guy, touring behind their new record, The Traveler. And we have Kenny Wayne and Noah in the studio right now. Hey, you guys want to kick it off with a song and then we'll start talking?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it. This is the first track off of the new record, The Traveler. This one's called Woman Like You.
1, 2, 3. Time girl, I need a little more to light up my world. I want a woman like you. Same old, change the stage to a new kind of cool kind of conversation. I want a woman, yeah, I want a woman like you. Give me that sunshine stuff, some of that summertime moonlight love, looking so sweet with a badass attitude.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt, I Want a Woman Like You. That is a great, great tune off the new record, The Traveler. Hey, it's Father's Day, and we're all hanging out here at WVXU in studio. Kenny, you're married, 5 kids, huh?
Yeah, six, actually.
Six.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So I imagined some of your kids come on the road with you, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah. I have my son's out right now. My daughter came out with me back in April for about a week. And the other day, Noah's daughter came out, and I think she's going to be there today.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, running around with the boys.
Yeah, cool. So, you know, we have a family atmosphere out here. You know, we've all kind of grown up. And Noah and I have basically grown up together, but... Yeah. You know, we've kind of like matured and everybody's got families and kids and wives and stuff. And so it's a real family friendly atmosphere. It's always cool to have the kids come run around and there's no danger of them, you know, anything going on that shouldn't be going on around kids, you know?
Yeah, cool, man. Your dad was a general manager of a radio station in Shreveport, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. He was GM and program director and he did the morning show for a long time, and so I grew up around radio.
Pretty cool. Yeah. Were you able to meet a lot of your early musical influences through your dad?
Yeah, man, you know how it is. You kind of get tickets to every show that comes through town and get to go to all the meet and greets and stuff. So I got to meet a lot of really cool people, and the main thing was I was just constantly surrounded by music.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, absorbing all of that. And some of it was good and, you know, helped me to become the musician that I am. And some of it, I just have like useless lyrics and songs that are stored in the back of my mind.
It really does.
That it's I can amazing. Whip out at any time.
Yeah.
You
any
know,
time.
Makes for fun banter on the bus. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because somebody will say something in conversation and it triggers a memory of a lyric from a cheesy song, and so then I have to pull it up and play it for everybody and ingrain it into their brains.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah there you go. He must.
Yeah. There you go. And Noah, your father, Jim, is an attorney here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, still practicing. And, you know, he strums the guitar a little bit, but, you know.
So you guys are out supporting the Traveler. Man, I tell you, I've listened to this record from top to bottom. And one of the things that I really enjoy is making records. Mm-hmm. So the recording process on the Traveler, did it differ from Lay It On Down? I know you used producer Marshall Altman, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, the process was similar. I mean, we kind of make records a certain way. You know, we kind of have from day one where, you know, we set up as a band, we all play together at the same time. You know, we do a combination of digital and analog recording so that, you know, because I'm pretty old school, but there are some benefits to doing things with the computer. So we use it for those benefits. But I mean, ultimately, it's like, you know, the essence, the best representation of this band is the live performance. That's what we do. We make records so that we can go play live for people. So the goal for me as a producer, as an artist or whatever, I feel like to capture this band in the best way possible is to capture that live performance in the studio. So, you know, we just set up and we play it down. And some of these tracks like Turn to Stone, the Joe Walsh cover is actually a live take. We did that in Louisiana and it was actually for the last record, but we didn't put it on the last record, but it was literally, we just played it down from top to bottom. And that's essentially a live performance in the studio.
Yeah. Right, I mean, here. We recut it for this one, but the first one, the live thing was just so good. That's
yeah.
What, you know, that's what we use.
That's great when you can be in the studio and get that raw energy. And you cats are pretty intense players live. Kenny, growing up in Shreveport, you know, right there around Texas, and of course there in Louisiana, did you ever cross paths with Dr. John?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, I met him, I think the first time I met him, I was about 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
But then, you know, some time passed. I don't think he remembered that. And then we were doing this thing where B.B. King was being honored for, I think it was by the Blues Foundation or something, and we were out in L.A., and then Dr. John was there. I was probably like 18 at the time then. And he came up to me and he was like, "Hey, man, my daughter turned me on to your music. I like that Ledbetter Heist album." You know, and we became fast friends.
Yeah, and then when we were recording Live On in Austin, he was in town. And that was the first time I met him. And I remember he walked in with Clifford Antone, who's a legendary guy in the Austin scene. And those two walked in and we were doing a cover of Midnight Rider. Mm. and he was going to play on it, and they pulled it up, and I was just standing over in the corner, you know, and Clifford goes, "Who's singing this?" And nobody said anything. And then I said, "I am." And he said, "It's really good, man. I got goosebumps." I said, "All right."
Well, I told you when we were setting up in here, I said, "Man, you're a really good singer, brother." Yeah. So
what was really my favorite memory of that was Jerry Harrison was producing.
Yeah.
And Jerry, you know, Jerry is like, he went to Harvard and everything. And right?
Talking so, Heads, Jerry Harrison.
Yeah. So, you know, he's like, he likes to bust out that big vocabulary, you know. And so that's Dr. Right. John was out there playing, and he was playing the B3, like a B3, right?
Yeah.
Jerry was like, "I don't know, could you play something a little more effervescent?"
Effervescent, that was the word.
And Dr. John was like, "Effervescent? What you mean, like fizzy? Okay." And then he played this really weird, like, percussion type thing. It sounded like he was playing percussion on the B3, and Jerry was like, "It's wonderful."
So, I don't know if it was effervescent, but it was
good. Right. That percussion thing doesn't sound effervescent.
What you mean, like fizzy?
Maybe it was fizzy.
Like fizzy water?
Hey, I know Dr. John just recently passed away. Man, that cat was, he was even part of the wrecking crew for a hot minute.
He was something else, man.
Cool. Talking about meeting people when you're younger, man, you're on tour with B.B. King when you're like 16 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love that story you tell about B.B.'s advice in regard to women.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he just said, you know, he just told me at a very young age never to go home with a woman that you don't know, which is good advice to anybody, really. But, because I guess he went home with a woman and then she was not very truthful with him. And he spent the night with her, and then her husband came home, and it was not a good scene.
Yeah, I could imagine. I think B.B. jumped out the window, at least.
Yeah.
Without his clothes.
Yeah, there we go. So on the new record, The Traveler, you work with a bunch of different writers. Were you guys writing in Nashville or with Nashville-based writers?
Yeah, I mean, I've always historically written with people from Nashville from the very beginning. And so a lot of these songs were written with Mark Selby and Tia Sillers, who I've been writing with since the very beginning of my career. And, you know, we wrote Deja Voodoo and Blue on Black and, you know, I mean, half my catalog or more of songs that has been written over the past 27 years or whatever I wrote with them. And so Mark recently passed away. He had a bout with cancer. And so, you know, it kind of is, well, it was kind of bittersweet. It was nice to have all these songs on this record, you know, to really kind of like get more of Mark's music and writing out there. It's just sad that he's not here to see it all go down. But I wrote with some other people as well, starting on the last record, just because I thought that it was time to try and branch out and try some different collaborations, because I knew that it would not be an easy or comfortable thing to do. And I just know that, like, it's real easy to just kind of stay like in the box that's where everything's easy and comfortable and predictable, and you know what you're going to get and all that stuff. It's not easy and it's not comfortable to go and try completely new and different things. And especially when you're writing with people, like, you can put two really great songwriters in a room together, but just because they are good songwriters doesn't mean that they're good together. And so, you know, you kind of have to really spend a lot of time meeting people, writing a song with them to find out that that doesn't work, and then moving on and finding the next person until you find the collaborations that do work. And so we did that on the last record, and I wrote with Keith Stegall and Danny Myrick and Dylan Altman, and got some great songs on the last record from those guys, and wrote more for this record with them.
Man, those Nashville songwriters, man, they got some great lyrical ideas.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they do. That's how they make their living. Those guys are constantly writing songs. The cool thing is that, you know, they write country music all day long. So then when somebody like us comes to town and wants to write, they're really excited because it's something different. You know?
Yeah, just like you were saying, you're trying to stretch yourself, get out of the box, do something different. So These guys are into the same thing conceptually, and hey, let's see see if we have some chemistry and see what happens, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So I know that people have mentioned, you know, you meeting Stevie Ray when you were, I think, about 7 years old and starting to play guitar then. I know you're from Louisiana. Is there like a guitar tradition that you see yourself in a lineage of?
You know, I mean, you know, I just, I don't really know. I don't sit back and just try and think of myself that often, you know? Like, I don't try
to your
and,
credit,
like,
brother.
Yeah, I don't try and like, well, where do I belong in all of this? No, but, you know, I mean, I just try and follow the tradition of the players that I looked up to and that they came before me, where you just give credit where credit is due, you know? Mm-hmm. And none of us invented anything here, you know? And we're just like... just, you know, paying tribute to the guys that inspired us and trying to do it in our own way. And so, you know, I've always been quick to acknowledge my influences and the artists that whose music I grew up listening to, because if it wasn't for them and their music, then there wouldn't be a Kenny Wayne Shepherd in this music.
So who would some of those people be, or who are some guitar players that you would tell a younger person, hey, make sure you tune in to these guys?
I mean, for me, there's a lot of like the obvious names like B.B. King and Albert King and Freddie King and Albert Collins and Muddy Waters, sure. John Lee Hooker, Stevie Ray, Jimi Hendrix, Billy Gibbons, you know, more contemporary.
Johnny Winter.
Yeah, Johnny Winter, Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
You know, all those guys. But then, you know, I like to dig a little further back, like Lightnin' Hopkins and Son House and, you know, Lead Belly and Robert Johnson and Blind Lemon Jefferson. And, you know, there's a lot of like the older blues musicians that are all really cool as well. So, but it just depends on the style that you connect with.
You know, Lightnin' Hopkins ended up on my list of guitar players that I thought, you know, might have interested you.
One of my favorite songs that he did was a song called Mr. Charlie. So look that up. It's really, he's telling a story more than he is actually singing a song. Uh-huh. And but he's portraying this character.
Take a little powder.
And the guy stutters, you know, so he's stuttering in the song. It's pretty cool. Pretty interesting. Yeah, it actually is. It's not the best story to be told.
Yeah. But I love blues songs like that. So I mean, you know,
Hey, you know, I was a jazz DJ for years and played a ton of artists that were on the Concord record label. And I noticed you guys have an arrangement with them. This is the same Concord that started off as a jazz label?
I guess so.
I think so. Yeah. Now they're really big. They're, you know, they're biggest independent.
They're not even really independent anymore.
They're a big record label. Yeah. Now,
they have like the whole Stax catalog and they got a bunch of stuff over there. Blue, you know.
So you mentioned about making a record using analog and digital and going live. How much rehearsing is done before hitting the studio to record?
We don't really rehearse.
Well, we came right off the road in the last one for sure. So.
Yeah, but we didn't work up any of the new songs.
No, we like, we do it in there.
Yeah, we went on the road and did like 5 or 6 shows just to get everybody's chops up. But it's not like we went in and learned the songs we were about to record. Right. We just kind of do that stuff in the studio. Yeah. We did that one for one record when we were in Austin for the Live On record. Yeah. I remember we got like a rehearsal studio. They were hoping that was going to move things on a little faster.
It's the first and last time we did
that. Didn't really work.
That was 98.
Okay. That was a year after you joined the band.
Yeah.
Right. So
didn't.
So you guys really just, you know, focus up and take care of business when you're in the studio.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I think that's the whole point of going in the studio is to like
make it more organic.
Yeah. So like the creative process is supposed to happen in the studio. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't like, what's the point if everything's just already kind of mapped out before you get in there? I mean, I guess some people don't have the luxury to be in there and spend a lot of time in the studio, but we work pretty fast, you know? So,
yeah.
I know you got a bunch of a variety of material on the new record. What are some of the songs, aside from A Woman Like You, that we could put in our playlist here and make available for people to hear?
Well, for the blues show, I would say there's definitely a song that I'm singing called I Want You. That's like, to me, that's like that. I mean, I feel like our next album should be like 10 songs that are right along that vein, which is like the definition of what I think are actual brand of, like, we do like blues rock, and then we do like blues, and we'll do more traditional, and then we'll do like more contemporary and stuff, or we'll do like more of a blues rock record, which this one kind of falls a little more on that side of the category.
Yeah.
But I think that's the definition of the Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band's version of contemporary blues, you know, like modern blues, not blues rock, but this is like modern blues, and this is the way we do it. You got the horn section and this real kind of swanky groove going on, and you know, it's just a typical blues song, but like lots of fiery guitar playing. And so that song, I think, is like a great, if you ask me to say, well, what's Kenny Wayne Shepherd's definition of modern blues in 2019, I would play that song for you.
I tell you what, man, that is a rough, tough song. The groove is so deep on that thing, and the kick drum is like boom, right in you. So aside from A Woman Like You, I Want You, any other things you want to?
I mean, I like the whole record.
Yeah, I mean, so do I, brother.
So I'd say play the whole thing. But
I really like Tailwind. That's Mark Selby, one of his final songs that he co-wrote on. And I think that kind of sums up the whole, our whole like philosophy on life. You know, we're all travelers here trying to do the best we can.
Well, I tell you what, guys, really, really appreciate you all.
Yeah, thanks for tonight.
Our pleasure. Yeah. You know, all right, what are we going to close out with today, guys?
Well, since it's a blues show, we're going to play some blues. It's our version of a song called King Bee. And actually, the first time we ever played this song together was here in Cincinnati at Stanley's Pub one night after we played Bogart's, probably about 20 years ago.
Right.
infamous evening.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
All right, the Muddy Waters song, King Bee.
I'm a king bee, baby, buzzing around your hive. I'm a king bee, baby, buzzing around your hive. Yes, I can make you honey, baby, just let me come inside. Well, I'm a king bee, baby, don't you want to be my queen? All right. I'm a king bee, baby, don't you want to be my queen? Yes, I can make you honey, baby, like the world ain't never seen. I want you to come see me, baby. Woo!
Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Noah Hunt doing the Muddy Waters classic, King Bee. Guys, thanks for coming in today. We really appreciated you hanging out with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, make sure you check out the Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band, their latest release, The Traveler. For the Blues, I'm Ron Esposito.
Baby, like you used to do.
That was I Want You by the Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band from their album The Traveler. They'll be performing in Louisville along with Buddy Guy on August 24th. Thanks for listening to The Blues on 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati and 88.5 WMUB Oxford. I'm Lee Hay.